Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, we talk about Nat Fyfe, diving, Freo and the kids.
That was out of bounds. I don't believe it. I see it, but I don't believe it.
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now.
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant. Yeah, terrific.
Oh, that is... Oh, that's what it is.
The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's Tuesday morning. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. It's brought to you by Tab Touch. With me in the studio is Glenn Quatermain, the sports editor of the Sunday Times newspaper. I'm Mark Duffield, the senior football writer at the West Australian. And Quarters, interesting weekend of football. We saw the resurgence of GWS, although you're not convinced.
No, not yet.
We saw the Hawks keep their season alive. And
just.
I'm not convinced.
No, nor am I.
We saw the Freo under-18s get smashed by Collingwood, and we saw West Coast go on holidays a quarter early against St Kilda.
Yeah, they did. I think they did, yeah. And you'll have to excuse if I can't talk properly this morning. I forgot my dental floss.
Okay. And, of course, Nathan Fyfe at the tribunal. There's issues over free kick counts in Perth again, the old noise of affirmation argument.
Oh, is there what? Yeah.
Rearing its head again. And what did you make of it all?
Oh, I think you're right about, I'm prepared to write that last quarter off with West Coast. I think they did go on, I don't want to be underrating what St Kilda did in that last term, but they did go on holidays a quarter early by the looks of it, I think. Freo, disappointed in that result. I just want more, a more competitive effort. Yes, they kicked seven in the last quarter, but they also conceded seven in the last quarter. So I don't think that anything to get too excited about over that last quarter. GWS, fantastic win, best win for some time. But the question remains, 33 tackles at quarter time, where were they before the round? I mean, this is the intensity they have to bring every week, and I've just questioned whether they can bring that every week. I think Adelaide and GWS, clearly the two most teams most affected by injury. Mm. And if you look at the top end, I think Adelaide's more affected. Yes, Toby Green's still out, arguably their most important player for GWS. But I think the top end at Adelaide is massive. The attrition has now got them. And I just hope they can hang on for long enough.
And make a run.
And make a run, because I'd like to see that. I think they've been really brave so far. And, you know, I'll just put the asterisks next to GWS for now.
It's going to be the charge of the Light Brigade.
It will be.
In the back half of the season, because we expect at some point Adelaide will get players back and they will make a charge. Port Adelaide are just hanging in there, and we expect more from them,
I think. I think on form, mate, I'm prepared to put a line through both Port and Hawthorn right now for making the eight. I just don't see...
Don't forget Port has a game in hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they're in the eight on percentage at the moment. They do have a game in hand. They have, I reckon, of their next six games, four are very winnable, but I would think they would have to win all of those four. If they were to suffer an upset in any one of those four games, then I think they're in all sorts of
The way
of
they're playing, the chances are they will. So that's the point I'm making.
Yeah.
I just think there's more to like about other teams. And, Melbourne just marches on incredibly well, the surge.
What about Jake Lever's knee?
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see. It took him a while to bed into that Melbourne defence, but he has bedded in, and now that's a big out. I guess it depends who they're playing. Really interested to see how they're affected by him.
I've just never seen someone do a knee like that.
Yeah.
I've seen players in play, not in contact, change direction and stumble a little bit and do a knee. He was basically just trotting around behind his opponent.
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's a pre-existing knee. Well, he had the knee reconstruction on that same knee, am I correct? It was the other knee, was it?
It's the other knee,
okay.
Yeah, which is not a good sign.
Okay. So he will have to have two knees done. Interestingly, he said he came back really well from the other knee. There were no... the pain you often have associated with it for 12 months wasn't necessarily there. So it's really bad luck for him. I thought he spoke very well afterwards, came out a day after and spoke about it. Must have been shattered. So to come out and put on such a brave face on behalf of, for the sake of his teammates, I thought was a big tick for him.
Absolutely. So let's get down to the main business as far as Western Australia goes. Obviously in...
GST.
Wrong
podcast.
In an hour or so, Nathan Fyfe goes to the tribunal to challenge his 1 week suspension for the forearm to the head of Levi Greenwood.
Deserves a week.
Deserves a week?
Yep.
Yeah, I'll probably... Look, I'm a bit like I was with Lance Franklin, where I wouldn't have been surprised either way. One thing I would say, though, is that if consistency is an issue for the AFL Tribunal, I'm not sure how you throw a forearm into a guy's chin and knock him out of the game and deemed to have no case to answer, and then the next guy, and this doesn't just apply to Fife.
You're talking about Burton?
It also applies, no. Lance Franklin put
Joel Hamling in
La La Land.
Yep.
And I didn't have a strong opinion on that one either, but I'm just, when you put one against the other, and what they're arguing is that a forearm to the head is automatically intentional. So the question is, why grade Fife's as intentional, and not just Fife's, but also Mason Cox's and Jack Graham's early on the season?
And not Buddy.
And not Buddy. But also, what was Tom...
Mitchell.
Tom Mitchell doing running around the next week after.
There are definitely inconsistencies. Yeah. I think Buddy's is a bit different because he was in that tackle.
Because he has the ball. And that was the thing that I was prepared to cut him some slack on at the time. But I guess you could also mount the case that Joel Hamling is not invisible. He was right in front of him. Buddy knew where he was. He had a fair idea where his chin was, and that's where his elbow went.
Yeah, I reckon Greenwood's not invisible either. And
I fully accept. I think Nathan Fyfe, either through frustration or clumsiness or whatever, he's hit him in the head with a forearm.
Yep.
So that's either a fine or it's a week. It's definitely not no case to
Look,
answer.
Obviously, it all hinges on whether they can reduce it from intentional to careless. If they can do that, and because Greenwood wasn't, he played on. Mm. So that is going to help him.
But so did Dane Zorko when Jack Graham hit
him. He did, and he got a week, yeah.
And I think...
Fives is worse than that, I reckon, in my book.
I'd agree with that. Mm. But the contact is minimal compared to what Buddy did to Joel Hamling.
Yeah.
Now, Joel Hamling was practically vomiting on the bench.
Yep.
After that hit. I just think, again, I have no strong opinion on Fife either way. It wouldn't have surprised me to get if he got fined or if he got suspended. And similarly with Buddy, as I said here a couple of weeks ago, it didn't surprise me that he got off, and it wouldn't have surprised me if he'd been cited.
Yeah.
But when you put the two against each other and ask the question, why is one forearm thrown into a bloke's face intentional and why is the other one no case to answer?
It's littered with inconsistencies. It has been all season, really. It's a shame, but I think he deserves a week for that.
And I
actually thought that when I saw it, and I've obviously pored over the footage time and time again.
Yeah.
And I still think it's worth a week.
I have no problem with Nathan getting a week for that. I think that, if you're going to hit blokes in the head with your forearm, you have to accept there's going to be some consequences, even if the player gets up and plays on. And if Levi Greenwood had stayed down, you're probably looking at a couple of weeks.
Yep.
I'm not comfortable with how it sits against Franklin.
Yep.
And I think Michael Christian shouldn't be either.
Fair call.
But then Michael Christian has problems with consistency. I mean, the Ryan Burton one on Sean Higgins is...
Well, that's the most baffling one this year.
We're still looking at that, and we're absolutely shaking our head and asking what the hell happened there and what was their thought process there.
Yeah.
And that has paved the way for a series of other players who've elected to bump and made accidental head-high contact with head clashes or whatever to just have no case to answer.
Yeah.
Even though there's been a couple of concussions involved in all of that. And I think they need to sit down and look at what duty of care really means. And duty of care means that if you're going to hit blokes in the head, there has to be consequences for you.
Well, perhaps this think tank that's just in its infancy now, but this should be a large component of it.
Think tank?
Whatever you want to call it. View of the game.
Well, there's another word for a think tank, isn't there?
What's that?
Well, it rhymes.
Well, there's some decent people in there, though.
There will be
some left field stuff in there as well. But
could
look forward to seeing what Blighty comes up with.
I think common sense is a good thing, and I also think being quite prescriptive about what you will and won't penalise, and then
I think that's the way to go.
You leave less scope for argument.
Yeah, I believe so. Tell me, vilified unfairly or fairly rants for the dive?
No, completely fairly.
Yeah.
It's not the first time he's done it. He nearly broke a long jump record. You know, he got a free kick out of
there's
it.
There's a bit of facial expression in the dive too.
Yeah, he got a free kick out of it, which means if you do that and it's a 5-point ball game, it has the potential to alter the result. That's why they crack down on these things in soccer, and that's why they have to start cracking down on them in footy, because
it's probably a free kick though. There were the hands in the back, weren't there? But
well, so then no need to.
That's right. Yeah.
You know,
he is better than that. And interestingly, both he and Sinclair, which was even worse.
Sinclair fainted.
Yeah, he did. Both were in the coaches' votes at the weekend too, interestingly. But yeah, so the coaches didn't mind it. But yeah, look, I think, and you move on from that. I don't reckon he'd be doing that again for a while.
Okay, so the free kick count, 25-12, West Coast versus St Kilda.
Yeah.
St Kilda's last six visits to Perth, 95 free kicks paid against them, 39 free kicks paid for them.
And I noted Alan Richardson, the St Kilda coach, on Fox Footy last night on AFL 360 saying, yes, I was aware of that.
Yes.
I was aware of that.
I'm kicking myself because I nearly asked him about it at the post-match. I looked at the free kick stats.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a lot that jumped out at me as being wrong, but it's the ones you don't get. And one that
that's the point he was making. He was more concerned with the kicks that weren't paid. It was just play on.
So ones that I remember, the one in particular is Jade Gresham got absolutely smashed early in the game, 30 metres out from goal. He was taken high. He was probably in the back. I think it was McGovern came in over the top of him. It's a free kick. Umpire just called play on.
Yep.
And I thought at the time that has to be a free. It is a factor. The noise of affirmation, as Richo called it last year.
It's a really loud stadium.
And you know, we've got people storming around the office at the moment saying, oh, well, you know, St Kilda played badly and they got beaten by a better team. GWS copped the same thing in Adelaide and GWS won and played magnificently.
It's now,
at loud stadiums with big crowds, they need experienced umpires who will be less affected by the noise.
We should get an umpire in here one day because it would be interesting to ask them that question. I mean, subconsciously, surely, it has some bearing.
Do you think they tell the truth?
I do, yeah. Why wouldn't they? Subconsciously.
I don't. They don't like to admit they're wrong. You know Craig O'Donoghue, don't you?
I do. Oh, I know. He's a good man. He's which is a nice segue into a question, I believe, the noise of affirmation this week. I think you might have one in front of you.
And I did write a story about this some time ago. Tommy Mack says, what about how the Eagles are generally always on the wrong side of the count in Melbourne, 3-for-3 so far this year? Should Simpson have whinged after the Carlton game, which was 25-16? It's a good question, Tommy, and I did write a story about this saying it does go the other way at times. I think, though, what we're seeing now with the new stadium and West Coast in particular, you're going to see 50-odd thousand West Coast fans and about 1,500
That's right.
opposition fans, and that stadium is loud.
And it's not – the noise of affirmation won't be the same in Melbourne because, generally speaking, the West Coast games won't have the huge crowds.
And I'll guarantee you, we go anywhere, our teams, either of them, Fremantle or West Coast, mm-hmm. and they play a team at a venue six times and they end up with 39-95 free kicks, they'll be saying something about it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll guarantee you. You can't just continue to cop a free kick count like that and you can't just assume that all the kicks were there and none of the ones you should have got, you didn't get. That's a very lopsided figure.
So what do they do about that?
More experienced umpires come to the noisy stadiums. So if it's let's say West Coast plays Richmond at the... Or let's say Collingwood keep winning. West Coast will go to the MCG and they'll play Collingwood and there'll probably be 65,000 there later on in the year and 60,000 of them will be Collingwood fans. It's going to be loud and it's going to be one-sided. It's a big game. You put experienced umpires on the deck and send your young people somewhere else because they're the ones that will get affected by the noise. If Brett Roseberry and Matt Stevic and Sean Ryan are umpiring the game in Perth on Saturday night, the free kick count is probably not 25-12.
Yeah.
Because they will call what they see, not what the crowd tells them they should be seeing.
I'll tell you what I didn't like at the weekend. Who was the Sydney player talking to the umpire about Clarko and having a coffee?
Oh, I love that.
Did you? Yeah, I'm not...
Dane Rampey. Yeah. I thought that was the best sledge all weekend.
Yeah, it just can't be sledging umpires, mate.
Well, at the end of the day, the CEO shouldn't be sitting down with a coach and having a coffee.
No, he shouldn't be.
And I think Dane Rampey let the world know how Sydney felt about that.
Yeah, well, I think we already knew, but that's interesting way of expressing yourself.
Yeah, that was a bit interesting.
Now, we must put our hands up and mention it. Me particularly, Gold Coast. I nearly got that one right. That tip.
Me
I was
too.
About 90 points out.
Yeah.
They have fallen right away, and it is now officially a concern. And I fear Tom Lynch is already gone.
Mm-hmm.
You just hope that – I hope he stays. I'd like him to. I mean, he's got the right to go wherever he wants to go. He's a Melbourne boy originally.
Yep.
But I hope he stays for the sake of that club because I have grave fears for them now. They were really competitive early, but that's fallen away now. Maybe it's because of the amount of travel they've had to do. But that first game at Metricon, 17,000 turned up. That's a good, healthy crowd.
Yeah.
And that was just a non-competitive nonsense, that game. And it was just total lack of pressure on Geelong.
So this can't just be – it can't just be lack of talent now because they've had so many high draft picks. And what's more, you see a little bit of something in a lot of the players that run around for them. It can't just be a coaching issue because we saw at the start of the year Stuart Dew had them structured up. They were hard to play against. I think most people were impressed with the way they're going about it. So Stuart Dew is not a numpty. And for that matter, neither was Rodney Eade. I mean, Rocket might have had his time as a coach, but basically certainly no Dill.
So is it an environment situation?
Well, I think they've got to put the whole club under the microscope. They need to look at their strength and conditioning, their preparation. Are their players physically prepared?
Haven't they been doing that?
Well, do they ever play four quarters?
No. No, I'm not disagreeing with you, but I thought they'd been looked at within an inch of their lives.
Well, you'd like to think they have been.
Yeah.
But sometimes you've got to bring in... I remember Fremantle finally in 2008 when Jason Webber came in. Because remember, Jason Webber originally arrived at Fremantle because he did a review on their strength and conditioning. And he basically pointed out a number of areas where he thought they came up short of the competition. And if you do that, what happens is your consistency through the season suffers because your players don't recover well, and your consistency over the course of a game suffers because you can't go hard for four quarters. Like a GWS did, for example, on a Sunday night against Adelaide. I think they need to go back and relook at it because it's been too long with too much talent with not enough shown. And I think the other thing they need to ask themselves the question is, whether Tom Lynch goes or stays, have they got the right leaders? Do they have the right on-field leaders to actually get the players together and rally them? And I saw May and Tom Lynch have a really ugly, uncomfortable conversation in the goal square after Tom Lynch had been outmarked by, I think it was Duncan. So Mitch Duncan has outmarked Tom Lynch in the goal square. Tom Lynch should have punched, tried to mark, has a bloke about two-thirds of his size take one over the top of him, go back and kick the goal. May has run in and absolutely given it to the co-captain at the top of the goal square. It wasn't a good look.
Yeah.
And I'm
do you fear sure. Are we talking a Jake Lever situation?
Oh, he's going.
Yeah.
He's gone.
Yeah, I think he's gone.
And what's more, he's got the right to go. You know, he has the right to...
Well, Nathan Buckley thinks so.
Well,
give me a spell, Nathan. Well, they're into him more than anyone.
I mean, if I'm the AFL,
yeah,
as Paul Roos said, I'm doing everything I can to try and convince him to stay. But at the end of the day, if Tom Lynch wants to go...
He goes.
He has the right to go. And he has the right to go back to Melbourne and pick a club and hope to play in front of big crowds in big games and hope to play in finals. One word of warning, though, Nathan Buckley left Brisbane at the end of 1993, and Brisbane won three flags, and Bucks never played
anymore. Yeah.
So sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for.
Yes, you do. Somehow I think Brisbane's way ahead of the curve than Gold Coast right at the moment.
But don't forget, after Bucks left, Collingwood played finals before Brisbane did, and Brisbane didn't play in a grand final in 2001, which was 8 years after he left.
Yeah.
So it does take time, but you need to be careful what you wish for in footy because the wheel does turn.
Yeah, well, I think you have to be right place, right time, and there is an element of luck involved with it all.
I suspect Quarters, though, if if they're looking at 10 things they need to do to get Gold Coast right, number one is they need to look at their fitness program.
Mm.
And they need to ask themselves the question, are we preparing our players to play 100 minutes of desperate, brutal AFL football for 22 weeks?
Because clearly they haven't so far.
They just don't measure up, do they?
No, they don't. So anything else take your fancy from the weekend? North Melbourne marched on against a Brisbane side that was down to one rotation, I think. So that was, but still, that's still a 10-goal, close to a 10-goal win to North. So just going beautifully.
They are. It's amazing what you can do when your best players are out there and they're playing really good, strong football, and that's what North have got at the moment. The reason why I wouldn't have North as a contender is because I think they'll be lucky to get through a season with all of those good players, A, out there, and B, playing as well as they're playing.
Well, they've been one of the sides least affected by injury. Yeah. However, they have produced the goods still. You've still got to marry the two up. So,
yeah.
The other one at the weekend was Richmond, and I think Essendon, as good as they were the preceding 2 weeks, my guess was proven correct that up against a really high-pressure team for four quarters, they would flounder, and they did.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe Essendon just found their level.
I reckon they have against that team. Now, Richmond's still the yardstick. They're still the test, I reckon, at this stage. And in front of 81,000 at the MCG, they don't just grow another leg at the MCG.
They do.
So I think they found their level. And I think, a good run towards the end of the year might see them slip into the eight, but I can't see them doing any damage deep.
No, I agree with that. I'd put them in a bracket alongside the Hawks and Port and those teams.
Yeah, the really intriguing one is still Geelong. Great effort against basically witches' hats at the weekend. Little Gaz, ran amok after the booing obviously worked. Gold Coast fans, which I guess you were expecting, but
they're entitled to boo Gaz.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. I don't disagree with that.
Little Gaz was turning up one week in every two for the last 3 years he was there, and he was getting paid a lot of money to do it.
So, do I have them do I think they'll win the flag? No. But you've got to have them somewhere in the conversation because of where they've got to now. And they've copped a few injuries too, Geelong.
So do they play finals?
Oh, yeah. I think they do.
So if they're not top two?
They're top five. I know it's a bit of a cop-out for me, but I've just got them in that five. I don't think they'll slip any lower than that.
I reckon they're somewhere between three and eight.
Yeah.
I reckon they could sneak into the top four, but probably be a really bad loser in a preliminary final if they did, and they could also just sort of scrounge their way into the eight.
Mm. Yeah, I can't see them going deep.
No.
The other question I'd like to ask you is Burgoyne.
Yes.
So, does he play next year? Now, I think he's got... It's about 27 games and he equals Adam Goods for the most games by an Indigenous player. I'm not saying that's the reason he'd play on next year, but look, he was one of the best, if not the best player out there for Hawthorn at the weekend. And my thoughts are that, yes, why wouldn't you?
If I would like to see him at the end of the year. We're only halfway through. There's 3 months of the home and away season still to go. And Sean is, 35 or 36 now?
30, can't answer that.
It's one of those.
I'd be saying it's 36.
Yeah, so.
Incredible career.
I'd want to see how he was going at the end of the year. And you would need to know the things that we don't know, which is GPS numbers, how's he running when they don't have the ball, how's his positioning in the defensive structure, all the things that supposedly cost Dom Sheed his place in the Eagles team before he was reinserted when Luke Shuey came. What the hell was going on there?
Oh, I don't know, mate.
So they've got the Saints, who they should beat with a leg in the air. Then they've got the bye, and they've got their probably the most valuable midfielder coming back off a hamstring. Just give him another 2 weeks, put another block of training.
And just leave Sheed in.
And bring him back after the bye.
Yeah, but they named him. Yeah, it was an interesting one. I don't know what their thoughts were there. But
he was picked before they knew he was fit.
Yeah.
So basically what Adam Simpson said at the post-match was that, we trained in the night and we picked the team in the afternoon. So we picked Luke, and then we realised he wasn't quite right.
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether perhaps at the last minute they had they just thought, look, why don't we give him another, had another thought about it, reconsidered it, and perhaps after picking him thought, why don't we just give him another week?
Well, better late.
Knowing that they'd beat St Kilda.
Better late than never.
Yeah.
But it struck me as strange, particularly when you deliver a pretty solid rebuff to one of your established mids,
yep,
which is what Dom Sheed cop, basically. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's a wake-up call and Dom defends more stoutly and runs more diligently defensively, then that's great. It's worked. But if it sort of puts his nose out of joint and he thinks, well, I'm not sure that I'm the one that should have been dropped, then you may have caused yourself a bit of friction for no good reason.
Yeah, he was okay.
He was okay, but he was okay from what we saw. So he was okay against Hawthorn for what we saw. Obviously, it is how he plays in the defensive structure, how hard he runs. Apparently, GPS numbers, they can actually work out how hard they're running when West Coast have the ball and how hard they're running when the other team's got the ball. And if there's a vast difference between the two, apparently you're asked to please explain, which is an interesting one. So quarters, we know how young Fremantle were against Collingwood, but you said you were disappointed.
I was, but you know what? I'll tell you what I was impressed with is Collingwood too. I mean, let's not take anything away from them. Incredible number of third talls who have kicking bags this year too.
Yeah,
Hoskin Elliott six at the weekend. We see this kid Majacek come in for his first game and kick four goals, and we've still got Elliott to come into that forward line. Very important player to them.
He is, so,
lot to like about the Pies. They're quick.
It's a great midfield, isn't it?
Yeah, they're quick.
I mean, that's where they're strong.
And Wells, with Wells in that side, I always like them when Wells is in that side because of his ball use, of course. But I think they're. Their forward line is functioning so well. And just remember, there's no Elliott, and Darcy Moore's been out for most of the season. I think that's probably a good, you know, we need to recognise the Collingwood midfield and the way that ball's coming in too.
So as a segue again, James Banyard asks, are you surprised at the criticism directed at Ross considering the age of the team? We've made the tough calls instead of topping up the list and trying to stay competitive over the short term. I think it's our leaders who are struggling. Apart from Fife, they seem to disappear when the going gets tough. I've always felt we had too many introverted players. If you look at any of the great teams, they have a lot of those in-your-face, brackets, Toby Green-like players. We seem to lack that.
Yeah, look, there's probably not. I mean, Walters and Mundy, I thought, were okay at the weekend. I thought Brayshaw was okay at the weekend. Look, it was really interesting, the post-match comments from Ross Lyon, trying to sell it to supporters and sponsors, most importantly. I thought those comments were really interesting. That's where they're at now. That's where they're at.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what they do, different coaches have different techniques at post-match press conference. Ross is a bit like Mark Williams used to be, where you basically come in.
He gives a monologue and then away you go.
Well, Choco just used to come in and start talking
and
say exactly what message he wanted to get out there, and then the questions would start. Ross waits for the first question, and then whatever that question is,
away he goes.
He says exactly what he thinks needs to be gotten out there. And clearly on the weekend, they were competitive for half of the first quarter, then uncompetitive until early in the last, and then they ran home when Collingwood took their foot off the pedal. Of the kids that played, obviously Grundy dominated in the ruck, but I didn't mind the games of Jones and Atness. I actually thought Jones took a couple of big clunks.
Yep.
I got told off by the other journos, by the way, for saying you play Scott Jones when you get down to Scott Jones. They thought it was a good sledge of Scott Jones. But he actually took a couple of really good contested marks, Scott Jones. And Atness won it 17 times around the ground. And
Gyro? Geez, he's got a nice kick on him, though.
He has.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good left footer.
Yeah, beautiful kick.
So he looked all right. I thought Atness and Jones are worth further looks. Kirsten, there was a couple. You mentioned the mid-sized Collingwood forwards dining out. I thought Kirsten did a couple of good things, and there was a couple of contests deep in defence that just didn't cut the mustard.
But if you're going to bring him in, play him in defence, you don't just throw him out after a week. You persevere with him for a couple.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yep.
You've got to get him back there, let him settle for a couple of weeks. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But don't just bring him in and bring him out.
I think so. I think they would do well to go for 2 or 3 weeks with what they played on the weekend and just see whether, you know, who finds their feet in the environment and who starts to flounder a bit, and then change the mix accordingly after that. As far as more aggressive players going, I mean, I think Lockie Reed.
He's aggressive.
Lockie Reed's a very good caller
and
announcer.
He's a good man.
Lockie Neal is a very good hard-nosed player. Fife is obviously a very good hard-nosed player. Walters is an elite player. So
Langdon's come on. I mean, there is a lot to like there with the youth, and I don't mind they've played the kids. I like the direction they're heading in. There's some rippers there. I just think it's an interesting a lot of commentary that's come out of the weekend from Melbourne-based journalists, Melbourne-based former players. Terry Wallace, I think, was one. Tim Watson was another. Just talking about how Freo have sort of fallen off the face of the earth in just a couple of seasons. And it's an interesting point.
Well, it's pretty obvious, isn't it? They were taking a run at a flag and their list got old. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, 2016, they played most of the season without Fife and Sandilands and Alex Pearce.
I guess the point they're making is that other teams do it and tend to, you've always got the one eye on the future, not just on now.
Yeah, that's true. But Geelong took a tumble out of the eight. Hawthorn's taken a tumble out of the eight and is trying to climb back in.
Yeah.
You're not convinced they'll get back in?
No, I'm not this year, no. But
now, Fremantle has sunk further than those teams. But we saw, well, I'll give you an example for people with diminished memories. In 08, and I think West Coast is a great club, and I think they manage their list very well.
Yeah.
But in 08, 09, 2010, West Coast did their last rebuild. In the third of those years, West Coast was on their way to winning their first wooden spoon.
Yeah. You know, the team we haven't mentioned too with this is the Dogs, because they have fallen away. And really interesting noise coming out of that club at the moment. I'm not sure if you saw much of the post-match, but really intriguing comments from Luke Beveridge, their coach, on Jordan Roughead.
You know what I get the feeling Beveridge is doing? I reckon Beveridge has looked at the players at the club, and particularly the players who played in the 2016 Premiership. And he's asking himself the question, and I think he's asking them the question, and I think he's doing it publicly as well. Who of you still have the hunger to take us back there, and who of you feel on some level deep down inside you that you've done enough to satisfy yourself in your football career? And I reckon that all he wants is to find another 30 players who he feels clearly still have the hunger. You know, we've seen him come down hard on Tom Liberatore. We've seen him
Wallace,
come down hard on
Wallace,
Jake Stringer.
Wallace.
Wallace.
He won't be there next year.
Yeah, Wallace is an interesting one.
He'll go.
Because he didn't play in the granny.
Yeah. No, he didn't. No. But he's clearly out of favour. He'll be gone next year.
But the comments about Roughhead were clearly pointed that way, weren't they?
Mm.
You know, what are you prepared to do to show us that you still belong here?
Mm. Interesting, Chris Grant, the football manager, also saying even in the hours after the grand final or the days after their premiership win in 2016, they were flagging, we've got some difficult roads ahead here with this squad.
Yeah, I agree with Paul Roos was talking about this on television, and he said he found those comments a little bit disrespectful. It was like the Bulldogs were basically acknowledging that they were only the best team for 4 weeks that year and that they got their timing right.
Well, they did.
Well, they were a pretty good team.
They were a pretty good team, but were they the best team? Questionable.
I would have thought they were in it up to their eyeballs before the injuries. And the reason why we'd all but written them off when finals came around was because the injuries were so severe. And we thought, well, we don't think a team can suffer so many injuries and still win the flag. But they managed to anyway.
Mm.
It
was one of the great achievements. 4 weeks of just great commitment to the match plan.
Yep, absolutely. All right, Quarters. Now, we'll be back on Thursday and we'll be talking about a lot of games over the weekend, but in particular, I think we'll have a big chat about the Queen's Birthday game.
Oh, yeah.
On Monday, Melbourne versus Collingwood.
Melbourne's home game, probably for the last time for a little while. We should acknowledge, too, great cause on that day, motor neuron disease, Neil Danaher, the terrific work he's doing, the great courage he's showing, but for the 18 coaches to be involved, and even Goodwin and Buckley are going down the slide into the ice on the day of the game.
So Goodwin and Buckley are doing it pre-match. Ross Lyons flying over from Perth. Fantastic gesture from the coaches.
It is, it is.
And fantastic commitment from the coaches. Get behind it. The Big Freeze Four. Neil Danaher, one of football's most inspiring men.
He is.
Quarters, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure, mate.
Back on Thursday when we will not tip Gold Coast under any circumstances.
GWS at Spotless. Oh, they're not too good at Spotless. I'm joking.
don't even sow the seed. We'll be back on Thursday.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.